We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, episode number 496. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company's senior SEO, Scott Fanak. Well, we apologize missing our last episode. We were both at a dental convention. Anyways, the Pacific Dental Conference. And we were sitting in a booth for another business we're involved with, firstdentist.com. Anyway, it was interesting. We met lots of really interesting people and had lots of fun just being goofs. So we're back.
I was very serious the entire time. I don't know what you're talking
about.
Of course.
Yeah, that goes without saying. we're back, and then Scott's going away, and I'll be soloing it. And then at a short time after that, it'll be both of us, I think. We'll get one episode in before I go away, and then he'll be soloing it. So it'll be an interesting couple months. Well, let's jump right in here to some non-SEO news. Google's search paperclip icon for search results. Tell me about this.
It's just a fun little addition that Google's testing out. Every time I see paperclip, I think Microsoft Clippy.
Yep.
It's never Clippy, though. Not Clippy. Anyways, they're testing a paperclip icon, which sits to the right of the search bar. If you click the paperclip icon, it copies to the clipboard the search string URL used for those search results. So I wasn't sure why they were testing this, because as a regular person, I would probably never use that ever. Like, when are you sharing search results with your mom or your buddy? Like, maybe never. But then I thought, as an SEO, I'd probably use it quite a bit, because sometimes I'm sending screenshots to clients or you're trying to share search results. So maybe I would use it for that. And rather than send the big long string, Google takes that search result string, or sorry, the URL for that search result, and puts it into a goo.gl link. So it's a shortener. So it makes it a bit easier from that regard. But then I started thinking about personalization, and I'm wondering, does it send and share the personalized results, or does it share whatever that person would see if they did the same search? That I don't know. And of course, being in Canada, I can't test it to know for sure. But potentially kind of a helpful for SEOs, or helpful for anyone who shares search results periodically. I don't know if anyone not an SEO would ever do that, but who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, you know, funny, I got stuck on goo.gl. Weren't they shutting that down?
That's confused. What I thought, but who knows? Maybe they're breathing new life into it.
Just for their own use, maybe. But anyway, I think that the tool is kind of useful. I mean, obviously there's a need for it. They probably see a ton of people sharing search results.
Yep.
So why not, right? I think I will use it, but not very often. All right, next, Firefox deletes its promise to never sell personal data and asks users not to panic. How could they? Why would they panic, right? And I, when I read about this a while ago, I was just like, oh, geez, what's going on? The changes were very significant and caused a huge panic, and there's a lot of people now who won't touch it. Doesn't matter what Firefox says. But anyway, this is what was originally there. Does Firefox sell your personal data? Nope. Never have, never will. And we protect you from many of the advertisers who do. Firefox products are designed to protect your privacy. That's a promise.
A few holes in that promise, I guess.
Yeah. So the new terms also.
Yeah, that's gone now. So.
Yeah, that's gone. It says, when you upload or input information through Firefox, you hereby grant us a non-exclusive, royalty-free, worldwide license to use that information to help you navigate, experience, and interact with online content as you indicate with your use of Firefox. It's reading between the lines, I guess, is what it comes down to. Anyway, after user backlash, Firefox updated it to say, you give Mozilla the rights necessary to operate Firefox. This includes processing your data as we described in the Firefox privacy notice. It also includes a non-exclusive royalty-free worldwide license for the purpose of doing as you request with the content you input in Firefox. This does not give Mozilla any ownership in that content.
That's better.
It is better.
It's clearer.
And I don't know. It's a shame they had to be all legally about it, but that's what lawyers are paid for. So
what I like about it, though, is the verbiage they used wasn't super clear. People got ticked off. Firefox responded and they changed it to make it a bit more clear. A lot of companies probably wouldn't do that. So at least they, you know, acknowledge that their user base wasn't happy with it. So a little bit of credit there, I guess.
Yeah. I don't understand why it doesn't say it won't sell your personal data, because they never say that, even in this new one.
No.
So it really doesn't answer the main question and the main concern. And I guess that's why a lot of people are absolutely losing their crap over this and are dropping Firefox. So it was, ironically, it's right when I went to it. I switched to it. This happened. I'm like, oh, for the love of, because Chrome is a mess. It's giving away way too much information now. Yeah. And yet we're beholden to it, really. We don't have to use it all the time, but we do it all the time for Stepforth, for all of our content and everything. It makes things a lot easier. But I am looking for an alternative, and hopefully there will be something really, really good soon. Can only
hope. We live our life, we collectively as people that use the internet, in a way that you almost have to assume that every app, every website, everything you use, they're selling your personal data. Everybody just, so I kind of live in the sense that I'm just assume everybody's selling my data, and I'm careful about what I put out there. Even social media, like, I'm cutting back big time on that because of partially that exact reason. So, you know, if you, you know, you have to be careful. Be careful with what you put out there. If it really doesn't want to, you know, see the whole world, just don't do it.
Yeah. As evidence here, it can change.
Yeah.
All right. What's next here?
Yeah. So we just a little bit of data. I like to share this stuff sometimes. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one that cares, but I find it a little bit interesting. And that is that Google now sees more than 5 trillion searches per year. On March 3rd, they announced in a blog post that they're processing 5 trillion searches. And so I wanted to take a look, and actually conveniently Search Engine Land had it there for me. So that was perfect, with some of the previous historical numbers here, just to give you an idea how quickly they've grown. In 99, before my time in SEO, they were processing about 1 billion searches a year. In 2000, 14 billion. 2001 to 03, 55 billion, which is when I got my start. 04 to 08, 73 billion. In 09, 365 billion. And then in 2012, they broke a trillion with 1.2 trillion, 2016 to 2 trillion, and now we're up to 5 trillion. So, you know, that's a lot of growth in, 26 years. So what do they say as well? It works out to about 158,000 searches per second. So we've had about 2-3 million searches since I started talking about this.
Yeah, it's inconceivable.
It really is. If I could have a dollar for every search. I don't know. Stupid thing to say.
All right. Let's jump into SEO news. So Google March 2025 core update is rolling out now. As usual, there's really not much to report. It's the first core update of 2025. The last one was in December. It's expected to take about 2 weeks, but who knows? There's nothing new about it. Just the typical advice that you need to produce quality content. I mean, nothing changes. And hopefully this isn't a crazy ride. What we have no idea yet.
Exactly. Yeah. So just, you know, keep an eye on things and don't, I think this is the biggest takeaway. Don't react to anything in the next 2 weeks. If something goes bad, don't freak out. Just wait. wait till it's done, and then freak out when it's done if things haven't bounced back. But while it's happening,
call us to help you out. We'll help
I've seen clients have their rankings tank during an update, and when the update's over, everything's as it was.
Or better.
Or sometimes better. So, you know, don't worry about it. Just have a coffee, go down to the beach. You're going to be okay.
Decaf.
I guess, yeah, in this case, probably decaf, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when everything seems to go into the crapper and clients are on our tail and what's going on, why, and we just have to calm them down. And it can be, thankfully it's very rare, but it can be a very difficult few weeks of lots of reassuring. And then when they come back, they're either there right as they were or better.
Well, I have a client who has a recipe website. And in December, he messaged me in a panic. His rankings were tanking. His traffic was tanking. He was so freaked out. And by the end of December, when the updates were done, he had his traffic levels were higher than they'd ever been, like record level height. And he has, according to SEMrush, more rankings than he's ever had before after it was completed. So he was pretty happy, needless to say. But of course, it happened at his busiest time of year too, which was kind of a bummer for him. So he did lose traffic in that period. But at the end of the day, he came out ahead. So Google, don't do that in December. Come on, Matt.
You'd think they learned, but they don't care. All those people are gone now, the ones that learned.
That's true. Yeah, they're all retired with their buyouts.
Yeah. Or they just forgotten. Who knows? It's just a shame. But yeah, the Florida update was the one that really caused the worst chaos, but it's now become just the norm for them to switch things whenever they want to.
Yep.
That's why I just can't wait for, I pray for the DOJ to tear them apart a little bit, mess up Google a bit. I know they're talking about actually removing Chrome from their ownership. We'll see what happens. I have no idea. Okay. Next up. Using date published versus date updated, or actually having both on the page, can wreck your organic click-through rate. Well, I think we'll tag team this one. Essentially, the deal here is if you put two dates on the page, and this is the visible part of your page and on a piece of content you've written, let's say, and the first date is when it was originally written, the second date is when you've updated it. Google can get very confused. You don't want to confuse Google. It's a bad thing.
Yes.
And when they get confused, it tends to mess up the results and can give users or viewers the wrong idea and dissuade them from clicking. Back in September, they visually, let's see here. This is, well, I'll let you take this next part because you wrote it and I'll probably mess it up.
Okay, yeah. So Abby Gleason, who's an SEO and had posted all this to to LinkedIn. In September, they visually added date updated alongside date published. So both dates were appearing in the blog posts. And what ended up happening is Google was showing the original date published date, even though everything had been updated to a current date. And when that happened, their click-through rate plummeted because it now looked like an old article. I believe it was from 2011 or something, like quite old. But it has been completely updated. So it was new and current, but Google pushed the wrong date. So it just messed everything up. They lost click-through rate. They lost traffic. And what they ended up having to do to fix it was to revert back to a single date, which in this case, I believe, was their updated date, the more modern date, that actually accurately reflected what content was in that post. So she did note something as well. It does not appear that schema has any impact on this, because what's happening is Google sees the two dates and they pick one. They don't necessarily pick the one you want them to pick. So only display the date you want Google to pick. In schema, you can have multiple dates in schema. You'll have like date modified or updated, that kind of stuff. And that's okay. That is not confusing Google because it's very clear to Google what that date is. If we look in Google's help documents, they even say, to minimize the presence of other dates on a page. If you follow the best practices and find incorrect dates are being selected in search results, consider removing all but the most relevant date on the page, that which reflects the date of the content now. So again, now that would be the updated date is most likely what you will want to display on that page. And that's Google saying that as well. So confusing? Maybe.
It's good to know though. This is very valuable info because Hell, everyone can use all the click-through rate they can get these days. So it just seems to be dropping with all this AI overviews. So very good to know.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, it's you again. You've got an interesting observation.
Yeah. So I saw something on, I think it was on Tuesday or something this weekend, I've never seen happen before. So a little background first. We have a client who has their website in four languages. It's available in English, Japanese, Dutch, and German. When it comes to the non-English versions of their site, I don't do a lot of work. We don't do non-English SEO. So those, they have other people that work on those sites, but, or those languages, but I sometimes have to go in, I'll fix broken links. You know, there's certain things I can do that don't involve changing words on the page, that sort of thing. And whenever I do that, often Google's like, this page isn't in English. Would you like us to translate it? And I always say no, because it doesn't matter. But now Google in personalization has discovered that I visit these pages in these other languages. And because I tell it not to translate, I guess now Google thinks I speak Japanese, Dutch, and German. If you're listening, Google, I don't. I don't speak. My last name is Dutch. That's the only Dutch I know is my last name. But then what I found, I did a search for, and I have it bookmarked and stuff, but for some reason I searched in Google for Google Search Console. I don't even know why I did that, but I did it. And I found something interesting. The first result was Google Search Console and a link. And then they had four site links for the About page. And the first site link was their About page in English. And then the other three site links were for each Japanese, Dutch, and German. And I've never seen search results in the past have language based personalization take place. So I don't know if this is a new thing that they're doing, or it's just the first time they've attributed these other languages to me personally. And I guess I could ask some bilingual friends. We have some people I could ask and see if they see that, but I'd never seen it before. And anyways, I found it kind of interesting.
It seems to be a pretty big coincidence.
Yeah.
So I would think that is some personalization. That's pretty interesting. You just never know what's going to show up next. That's something I think, did you take a screenshot of it?
I do have a screenshot. I could put it in the show notes, actually.
I would actually share that with Barry Schwartz. He might be interested by that.
Oh yeah. I'll definitely do it. Barry, if you're listening, you're probably not listening. If you're listening, I will send that to you and just share it with you. Maybe he'll give me a shout out on SE Roundtable.
There you go.
Talk about him enough.
Just mention it was... Yeah, we were talking about an SEO 101, and yeah, it's interesting. He's probably seen it before, but you just never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, now to some local SEO news. Google Business Profiles, the dumpster fire that it is a very delicate area of optimization. So if you have a local business, you have your own Google Business Profile, the suggestion is to avoid any major changes, and that's because profiles are being suspended for seemingly little reason, for just innocent updates. Now, the updates, granted, may be a little bit major. Sometimes it's the change of your business name, which is something that Google's a bit touchy about, especially these days. But it could be completely innocent. Like I said, you're literally doing the right thing. Doesn't matter. Suspensions are happening, and it takes a month at this stage for those suspensions to be reviewed. If you ask for that review. Anyway, the suggestion is to stick to minor updates so that, and this is especially true while you're building the trust of your profile. If it's a new one, you don't want to be messing things around a lot. Just do what you need to do and stick to the minor updates, such as changing your hours. Your phone numbers, be careful with that. That's a pretty major update. Just be careful. If you're doing it right, follow the right practices, you're okay. Changing categories can actually be considered a major update. All of this is, but, you know, a lot of guesswork amongst the people that I was reading on this forum, but just from their instinct and experience, you know, avoid changing categories if you can. But definitely keep your hours updated. What were some of the other things they suggested? Adding imagery, anything like that. That's no problem. All that stuff is great. Just be very careful with anything that seems significant to the running of the profile. Anyway, I do have a link here you can check out. It'll be in our show notes. So do consider that if you're interested. And next up is our AI news. Google is testing an AI mode. This is now available in Google Labs. What have we got here, Scott?
Yeah, so this is AI mode. Just everything we've been waiting for, I guess. I don't know. So if you've been accepted into the Google Search Labs experiment, I have not because Google doesn't like me, and I did try, and they said no. If you are, you will see this new tab within Google Search. It's just a little tab. I believe it's beside the search bar. Again, you click AI mode, and you're basically ChatGPT, I guess. Essentially, Google's Robbie Stein, VP of Product. I feel like that should be VP of Products, plural, but VP of Product. He responded to some concerns. Oh, and I was trying to look it up because I thought his title was wrong. And I think he was the former CEO of Yahoo because I kind of saw his name. I don't know if it's the same guy or not, but same name anyways. I'll have to check that because I'm curious. Not that it really matters. There's a question by Mike Futia. I don't know who that is. Random person, I guess. Hi, Mike. Hope you're listening. He said, how do you quell legitimate concerns from web publishers that you are scraping all their content and removing the incentive for users to click over to their sites? Robbie's response was, the team is really focused on how we make it easy to click to sites. We have a lot more UI updates coming that we showed in our announcement post. It's something we hear from users that they want and core to how we're building AI mode. Also, AI mode is going to respond to new types of questions, let people ask follow-ups, and explore different facets, and ultimately create new opportunities for sites to rank. What I found interesting, though, and actually, I don't remember who wrote this article. Sorry, Search Engine Land, or maybe it was Barry on SE Roundtable. My bad, I should have this note. Anyways, it's like, this is something that was said before when AI Overview was being released, that it would lead to more clicks. I question that that's true. In fact, I'm pretty confident it's the exact opposite, especially because...
You probably heard my eye roll.
I did hear it. Yeah, it's burning my ear. I've got tinnitus now from that. Thank you. And the problem is there's no real reporting on Google's side about traffic coming from AI Overviews. So there's no Search Console reporting. Like, if they added that, we would know, and it would be great, and people, if the clicks are indeed higher, which I don't think they are, but it would be visual. You could see it. It would be good, but the opposite is kind of true. Third-party studies have actually shown evidence that click-through rate from AI Overviews is weak at best. So I don't know. What will AI mode do? Who knows? I mean, they're still in development and testing how they'll display those citations, but if there's just like a whole bunch of content and a whole bunch of citations everywhere, I really don't see how it would lead to more clicks. In fact, I think it would be less. But
there's hopefully a reason why they're not including that data
in
Search Console. They're afraid.
Yeah, absolutely they are.
Or very least, they just don't want another headache, which would be everyone freaking out at them. It's not good. Even just using your phone and asking a question of it using voice, you'll never get ever a link to easily click. It's just the answer. You might look below it and you can go and down there and find it, but the answer is provided.
Yep.
And not always correctly, but it's provided. So, and it's often read to you. And how often is that being done versus people doing a search on and actually seeing a search result? Yeah, I have to wonder. I mean, all these things are changing, and we only have a small glimpse of the pie. It might be far more than we ever know. All I know for sure is that a lot of people are finding they're losing traffic, and it's going to be getting worse as the year goes on, I believe. So it's why we're focused on ensuring that we do everything possible to ensure our clients are showing up in the top in AI Overviews. In any kind of AI search, and it is not easy, and it's very important you have great content and your site is not stagnant. And if you really want to succeed in a really competitive market, you also have to look at media. YouTube and LinkedIn are really good places. YouTube in particular is really, really good.
We talked about that. Yep.
Yeah. And I think it's something that I'll be preaching this whole year because it's very clear that the results are there. It's another Google property. It's logical. because it has a lot of different ways that the content can be shared, from clips to the translated text to universal search results, and also through the AI. So it's just, it's pretty awesome. And I think it's going to make the bar higher for clients, and that's going to be tricky. It's going to get a lot harder for people to maintain a top ranking if they're not on top of everything. Not all doom and gloom. I mean, it means too that if you put that effort in, you are going to stand out, because not everyone wants to.
Yeah, you'll be rewarded for it.
Yeah. AI search engines often make up citations and answers. This is a study from Columbia Journalism Review. AI chatbots and search engines often provide wrong answers and make up article citations. The study focused on how tools access present, and cite information from news publishers. The study performed a total of 1,600 queries. It randomly selected 10 articles from 20 publishers. They then selected digital excerpts from these articles to formulate their queries, deliberately choosing excerpts that would return the original source within the first three results if searched in a traditional search engine. Their focus was to assess how well chatbots could identify article headlines, original publishers, dates, and URLs based on the excerpts. And the findings. Take it away, Scott.
All right. Accuracy issues. So overall, chatbots provided incorrect answers to more than 60% of the queries. For instance, Perplexity had a 37% incorrect response rate, while Grok 3 was much higher at 94%.
Go Elon!
He's awesome, isn't he? Jeez, 94%. I'm just biting my tongue right now. Confidence in incorrect answers. Premium models often provided confidently incorrect answers more than free versions, raising concerns about the user's ability to discern accurate information. Disregarding crawler preferences, many chatbots bypassed robot exclusion protocols, leading to potential misuse of content from publishers who had explicitly blocked access. There were fabricated citations. Chatbots frequently fabricated links and cited syndicated or incorrectly attributed articles, undermining the integrity of the original sources.
AI is making fake news.
It's all fake AI news. It's Skynet. It's coming. Inaccurate attribution. Even when chatbots identified articles correctly, they often failed to provide accurate URLs, affecting publishers' traffic and visibility. Overall, the study indicated that collectively, the chatbots produced incorrect answers to more than 60% of all queries tested across, I think there were 8 different models that they checked. So that's encouraging.
The future is bright.
Isn't that great? Yeah. So if anyone tells you AI is awesome, yes, but
yeah, you got to be careful. But yeah, and there's going to be a lot of those for the next while, for years to come. I think even with all the advances, there's going to be some pretty shocking discoveries of how bad certain aspects of it are that we didn't realize.
I want to point something out about that piece as well, since it's about AI. The study was really long, and I was just like impatient, and so I skimmed it, and then AI basically created that entire write-up for me.
Nice.
So if you don't like it, it's not me. If you liked it, I lied, and AI didn't do it.
Did you use HARPA?
No, I just used TeamGPT.
Oh,
Scott. I know, I forget about HARPA, but anyways.
It's literally on your browser.
I know, I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
I'm always hassling our friend Scott here to advance.
I'm a slow adopter sometimes, and I don't know why that is, but
it's okay. It makes you a very steady employee and very good at what you do. So yeah, that's good.
I come around. I always do.
I'll just show some claw marks as I work away at it.
Yeah.
As you tear yourself away from things. Well, on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com. And please, if you have feedback about it and you want to suggest any changes or best ways we can improve it, let me know. I would love to hear that. You can post it on our Facebook page by searching SEO101 podcast on Facebook. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every week on WMR anchor.fm.
Great. Thank you for listening, everybody.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.